is the news.
Iran slams as outrageous the U.S. denial of an agreed deal on a humanitarian prisoner swap. It says Tehran is ready to proceed. The death toll from severe floods in Western Europe rises to 183. Search operations go on for hundreds of missing people. And concerns are growing ahead of the start of the Tokyo Olympics. Organizers reporting 3 new COVID-19 infections among athletes. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Now, top story this hour, Iranian foreign ministry has hit back at the U.S. after it denied an agreement, also involving the U.K., to swap 10 prisoners on all sides. Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh stressed that existence of the deal and even an agreement on how to announce it are simple facts. He said that the U.S. denying the matter is outrageous. The official said that the humanitarian swap was agreed in Vienna, but separately from the nuclear talks, and that Iran is ready to proceed today. Iranian top negotiator in Vienna talks said that a prisoner exchange could take place on Sunday, but a spokesman for the U.S. State Department denied any deal outside the framework of the nuclear talks. Ned Price claimed the prisoner swap is held up by the delay in the nuclear talks. He also accused Iran of outrageous effort to deflect blame for the impasse in the negotiations. Representatives of the Afghan government and the Taliban are due to meet in Qatari capital Doha for a second day of talks. Several ranking officials, including former President Hamid Karzai and head of the High Council for National Reconciliation, Abdullah Abdullah, are attending the negotiations. The new round of talks has stirred hopes that might lead to lasting peace in the country. For months, the two sides have been meeting on and off in Doha without any major breakthrough. Negotiations come as the Taliban have stepped up attacks on cities and villages, seizing a vast swathe of territory. The Taliban supreme leader, Hibatullah Akhundzadeh, now saying that he strenuously favors a political settlement in spite of the group's territorial gains and advances. The repercussions of the Saudi-led war in Yemen are getting worse year after year. Thousands of disabled in the war-torn country are deprived of their basic rights, such as access to medical assistance, and that's amid the apathy of international bodies. Our correspondent has more.
Since the beginning of the Saudi-led war on Yemen, thousands of civilians have lost their limbs, eyes, or got mentally disabled due to the lethal bombardment on civilian facilities. According to the Amnesty International, 4 million people with disabilities in Yemen face multiple challenges, and the number is growing up each year as the war continues.
We feel like there is deliberate negligence by the international organizations towards us, as they have not provided anything so far. This comes as the number of disabled exceeds 4 million, according to the UN organizations. We call on the international organizations to come and see our sufferings. Most of us don't even have a wheelchair.
Yemen's Disabled Care Fund says it provides healthcare services for more than 200,000 disabled, including 50,000 children who are getting educational services as well. However, the fund is suffering from a shortage of money amid the continued absence of related international organizations.
The Disabled Care Fund suffers from many difficulties, including lack of resources. Meanwhile, there is a significant increase in the number of the disabled this year. Sometimes we cannot provide wheelchairs and medicines for some of the disabled. Unfortunately, the international organizations turned a blind eye to this humanitarian catastrophe, we call on all the related international bodies to fulfill their duty towards the disabled Yemenis and provide aid to this vulnerable group.
In late 2015, the Saudi Lid Coalition has bombed the Anour Center for Care and Rehabilitation of the Blind in Sana'a, inflicting heavy damages on it. Since the beginning of the Saudi war on Yemen in March 2015, the relentless bombardments of the kingdom have killed tens of thousands of civilians, including women and the children.
Besides losing parts of their bodies, millions of people with disabilities are among those most oppressed groups amid what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. They say the Saudi war and the blockade have turned their lives into a real tragedy. Abdulatif Loshali, Sana'a.
The annual Hajj pilgrimage has begun in Mecca, with tens of thousands of Muslims residing in Saudi Arabia amid the COVID pandemic. Authorities have chosen only 60,000 fully vaccinated residents through a lottery to take part in the second downsized pilgrimage. The number is far below for one of the world's largest annual religious congregations, which saw some 2.5 million attending the ceremony before the pandemic in 2019. Pictures coming out of Grand Mosque in Mecca show pilgrims circling Islam's holiest site in masks and on distant paths. Five-day Hajj reaches its peak on Tuesday, which marks Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice. Rescue workers are still searching for survivors in parts of northwestern Europe after rain-triggered floods caused rivers to burst and houses to collapse. Days of extreme rainfall in Germany and Belgium have claimed the lives of 183 people. Many still missing. The death toll could rise further. In many areas, rescue efforts have been called off, the focus shifting to the cleaning operation now. The scale of the damage has become unclear as the waters begin to recede and crews clear the streets of debris. Efforts are also underway to restore gas, electricity, and telephone services. European leaders have blamed climate change for the worst floods in decades. Switzerland, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands have also been affected. Just an hour ago, I talked to our correspondent in Brussels, and Jerome Hughes said that recent floods have created an appalling situation in terms of human and financial losses.
And it's a very complex situation because as the death toll rises, and unfortunately we have a situation whereby the emergency services are finding bodies in, you know, houses, apartments, and even vehicles as well that have been swept away by the waters. And it's a tragic situation. Apart from the terrible burden on the families of those who have been lost, you also have a situation whereby we're talking here about billions of euro worth of damage. I mean, these are entire communities that have been washed away. It's an appalling situation, both, you know, in terms of human loss, but also financially. And, you know, of course, when we look at the reasons behind this, of course, climate change is being talked about. But also there's a lot of criticism, Behrouz, around planning, because these communities have been built on wetlands and floodplains. And actually now there's a big focus now on why are these communities being built in these type of areas, because actually they're not suitable to have communities, to have villages, to have towns.
Well, moving on with the rest of this broadcast, COVID-19 cases surging in several EU nations, mainly attributed to the highly contagious Delta variant. Now, that could have major health and economic implications. Jerome Hughes has more on that.
Following an easing of restrictions in the EU and UK, coronavirus cases across Western Europe are on a sharp upward curve. The Delta variant, first identified in India and which spreads much more easily, is being blamed.
The world is becoming a village, so people travel, it's hard to contain.
See all the people here, and some people are not that careful, I think, so...
One word for me, go to vaccine.
The vast majority of young adults and children in the EU have not been vaccinated. This is why the virus is moving around so quickly, experts say.
In view of the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant that is raising concerns not only in Europe but also around the globe, it is extremely important to vaccinate, as per national recommendations, as many people in Europe as possible.
Economists say the EU simply cannot afford further lockdowns. Economic forecasts for the 27-nation bloc are positive, but there are a lot of unknowns.
We continue to monitor the situation very closely, and in particular, and obviously, we are monitoring the Delta variant.
The fact that protectionist Donald Trump is no longer in the White House offers some economic hope, senior EU officials are indicating.
In terms of our relationships with the US, we have gone from a winter of discontent to a summer of cooperation.
In several EU nations, including Greece, France and Ireland, young people have staged protests believing they are being forced by governments to take the jab in order to participate in society. We have been getting some views in Belgium.
I mean, it's good that the protest is there, isn't it?
I feel forced to receive something I don't want to receive,
be vaccinated or not. So you can't force people to do that.
Health authorities in the EU argue it is important that young people do get vaccinated, claiming they may only develop a mild illness initially with COVID-19, but could ultimately go on to suffer from long COVID, which can have life-changing implications. Campaigners say EU leaders are shooting themselves in the foot by not providing more vaccines to less well-off parts of the world. This could lead to new variants that might be resistant to existing vaccines, they warn. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Now, concerns are growing as the number of COVID-19 infections among Tokyo Olympics athletes is on the rise. Organizers of the Games reported 3 new cases on Sunday. There were also 10 new cases connected to Olympics, including media, contractors, and other personnel. An International Olympic Committee member who had been inoculated against COVID-19 tested positive upon landing in Tokyo. And this shows the high infection risk even from vaccinated attendees. Infection rates are climbing among the general population of the capital, topping 1,000 new cases for 4 consecutive days. Polls indicating many Japanese oppose holding the games with the influx of overseas visitors it entails. Now, Brazil, meantime, has recorded some 34,000 new COVID cases and 870 deaths as the contagion continues to sweep across that country. The figures raise the overall cases there to 19.3 million and put the fatalities at over 541,000. Brazil is grappling with the world's third worst outbreak and a second high death toll following the U.S. Meantime, in Mexico, the health minister confirmed 12,630 new cases and 225 deaths. The Latin American country has logged more than 2.6 million infections and 236,000 COVID-related fatalities. A shooting outside a baseball stadium in the U.S. capital, Washington, D.C., has left at least 4 people wounded. And that happened while a game was going on at Nationals Park, packed with thousands of spectators. The incident caused the match to be abruptly halted and players rushing off the field. Some fans scrambled for the exits after hearing the gunshots before all the crowd were told to leave. Police said that the victims were taken to hospitals for treatment and that there was no ongoing threat. No immediate words on shooters either. The discovery of several mass graves containing remains of children who attended residential schools in Canada has renewed the debate on the historic mistreatment of the indigenous people in the country. Now, researchers say that the graves found so far are only the tip of the iceberg.
The discovery of an unmarked graveyard at a former residential school run by the Catholic Church in the Canadian province of British Columbia in May, which contained at least 215 human remains, mostly young children, prompted an outpouring of grief and anger and a wider investigation into similar boarding schools that were open from the late 19th century to the mid-1990s. The probes have so far found some 1,100 bodies at the sites of former residential schools in the provinces of British Columbia and Saskatchewan. A Canadian researcher whose works contributed to the uncovering of the first mass grave has said the discoveries so far have barely scratched the surface. The residential school system in Canada was established in 1883 under the country's first prime minister, Sir John A. Macdonald. The aim was to assimilate indigenous peoples in Canada and destroy their languages and culture. By the 1920s, attending residential schools had been made mandatory for children aged between 7 and 15.
These have been going on for years. The residential school survivors just basically were ignored. Now today, it seems a shock to some people, but it shouldn't be a shock because This was known that it was the policy in Canada. It was also the policy in the United States. They just pulled these kids out of their homes, and they wanted to indoctrinate them. And that's exactly what they tried to do.
Some 150,000 children were separated from their parents, often under threats of persecution.
Now, so far, 1,323 bodies have been discovered at various sites across Canada. For more than a century, Canada's residential school system separated First Nation children from their families and exposed them to all sorts of abuse. The mistreatment of children, some as young as 3 years old, is well within living memory. So how can the Canadian government redress the grievances of the First Nations population?
The first mass grave in British Columbia was found after Indigenous elders recollected the memories of young children digging holes in the ground. The survivors have told harrowing stories of how the mistreatment and abuse the children were subjected to at the former residential schools led some to attempt suicide or try to escape.
Many of our children who ran away during the winter and froze to death on their way home. And the quilts, the black robes, start lying about the children. Oh, yeah, they're doing fine here. In the meantime, they were missing, and no one had searched for them.
A former student of the Cooper Island Industrial School has described the place as Canada's Alcatraz. In a 2015 report, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada called the practices employed in the former schools, quote, cultural genocide.
We're trying to say, people trying to say now, cultural genocide, as if it doesn't fit in the description of the word genocide, as defined by the United Nations. I mean, it's very clear that that's what they did.
These are the hard truths that are part of Canada's history. These are the hard truths we must confront as a society.
The Canadian government has vowed to fulfill the Indigenous people's demands to fund investigations into the graves around the country, but it's come under criticism for failing to do so earlier, as the discoveries made so far have been funded by the Indigenous groups themselves. The First Nations leaders say over 6,000 children died at the schools from causes like disease, accident, and suicide, but there's no clear picture of how many children lost their lives throughout the years. That means there will be more headlines about mass graves discoveries around Canada in the months to come.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, July 18th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast in IRIB English Radio. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important, because your views help us improve the quality of our programs. And here I do express my deepest condolences on the tragic martyrdom anniversary of the fifth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him, and his progeny, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him. Stay with us until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, of course. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. Dear listeners, here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including G. Hojibens from Belgium, Victor Varzin from Russia, one of our regular listeners, and Abdul Alim from India, also one of our regular listeners. And here I do express my appreciation and gratitude to our dear listeners, G. Hojibens, Victor Varzin, and Abdul Alim, for their commitment and support to IRIB English Radio. And of course, a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters, including Howard Barnett from England, who has sent us an email, Henry L., Omar Hay from the Philippines has sent us an email. Victor Varzin from Russia, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. From Japan, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Toshio Shibata. And the last but not the least is an email from Michael Suberg from Sweden. Many thanks for sending us these emails and letters from around the world, dear listeners. After a short break, I will be back with these emails. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and I'm here with an email from Henry L. Omate from the Philippines. Henry from the Philippines says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, greetings from Bacolod City, Central Philippines. I missed your broadcast in shortwave for some time since I had difficulty listening to the frequency given. But in the past, I would enjoy listening to your shortwave broadcast very much. I'm lucky to catch you online this evening via your website, parstoday.com/EN. Listening again to your program, Listeners Special, after a long time, was a good experience. Great show, indeed. And so was the Spotlight program. I will be listening again next week. Please kindly send me your frequency schedule of your shortwave broadcast. I'm very much willing to be part of your Listeners Special program. In the past, you interviewed me twice. You can send me the questions and I will be recording my answers and send them back to you via email. Thank you. More power to IRIB English Radio." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Henry L. Omate from the Philippines, and many thanks for sending us this really encouraging and inspiring email. We're so happy that you finally found our website and you could catch the program, because as you said, you had missed the shortwave. So we are happy that you found IRB English Radio again. And good news. Yes, that's good news. And we have online broadcasting of IRB English Radio in our website, parstoday.com/EN. But in our website, you can also find the frequency schedule. And there you can maybe catch shortwave radio programs again in your region, Bacolod City in Central Philippines. Many thanks for writing this email to us. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And this is an EQSL card because of the coronavirus situation. But that's good. Thank you. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future, Henry L. Omate from the Philippines. We wish you all the best. Tell us your views about our broadcast. And from England, we have an email from Howard Barnett. Howard Barnett from England says, "Dear Sir or Madam, in IRB English Radio, this letter is to thank you all for your beautiful EQSL card, which I received today on Friday 9th, July 2021. It's very nice and a nice gesture from IRB English Radio in the time of coronavirus pandemic, that sending a paper QSL card is difficult for radio stations. Thank you again, yours sincerely." And salam and warmest greetings to you, Howard Barnett from England. And many thanks for writing this message and this email to IRB English Radio. Yes, thank God that you enjoyed the EQSL card which you've recently received. You received it on July 9th on Friday 2021. We are so happy that you enjoyed it very much. Yes, that's a nice gesture in the time of coronavirus pandemic, and we have no option other than that, because we really like our listeners around the world. Howard Barnett from England. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Howard Barnett from England. Tell us your views about IRB English Radio broadcast. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to your program, listeners, a special this Sunday program. And from Russia, we have an email from Viktor Varzin. Viktor Varzin is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear friends, warm greetings from Russia. Sorry for the delay in responding you. I have some problems with internet devices. You really take care of your radio listeners in all fields. I was so lucky that I received a paper QSL card, and your card is very beautiful. It is also a good decision to send an EQSL card to those listeners who are not able to receive a paper QSL via post during COVID pandemic. But it is very nice that you can have something in hands as a memory from the station. St. Petersburg during the last couple of days has been very sunny. It broke the heat record for 5 days in a row. That was plus 33 to plus 35. That's extremely hot for us in Russia. In 2 days, all air conditioners and ventilators in our city were sold out. I wish a very good summer for you. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you from Iran. Viktor Varzin from Russia. And thank you very much for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. You felt sorry for the delay in responding to us. No harms felt, no problem. But anyway, you sent an email to us. Many thanks for that. And you had problem. It seems that you had problem with the internet devices. We are so happy that those problems, those troubles were resolved. It's a nice compliment. You said we really care about our radio listeners in all fields. Yes, we send our dear listeners around the world EQSL cards in the time of pandemic. Yes, we care about our dear listeners around the world. And we don't forget them. And in the time of pandemic, we have designed and prepared and sent our dear listeners EQSL cards. So wait for one of them. Very soon, Viktor Varzin from Russia. And you said St. Petersburg in Russia, in your country, has experienced very hot weather. You said it's sunny in your region, in Russia, in your country, which is a cold region. And you said it broke heat record for 5 days in a row. That was plus 33 to plus 35 in Iran, which is a hot region and a warm country, a warm and dry country. It is plus 40, about, of course. And it's so much in your country, in your cold country, Russia, plus 35 is so much. And it's not just in your country. As you may know, it's really hot around the world, everywhere around the world, including Canada and the U.S. have experienced really hot weather. And there are reports of deaths because of so much heat in Canada and the U.S. I think you've heard about it in the news. And also you said air conditioners and ventilators in your city were sold out all. That was interesting. We wish you a very good summer, Viktor Varzin from Russia, and thank you very much for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And from Japan, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Toshio Shibata. Toshio Shibata from Japan says, "Hello, I'm resending this report. Could you please consider to send me an EQSL? It also would be highly appreciated if you could add the transmitter location to the card. I really hope that COVID-19 pandemic will come to an end in Iran. Best regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Toshio Shibata from Japan, and many thanks for sending us this email. So you've resent this report. Of course, my colleagues will send you an EQSL card. Don't worry about that. And also, we hope that the coronavirus pandemic come to an end everywhere around the world, not just in Iran, everywhere around the world, especially in Japan. You know why? Because in your country, you are holding the Olympic and Paralympic Games just in a few days. I think 3 or 5 days at the time we are broadcasting this program. Toshio Shibata from Japan. Yes, we hope that the COVID-19 pandemic come to an end very soon around the world. Best regards. Yes, Toshio Shibata from Japan. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters. Here we have an email from Sweden. This email is from Michael Sjöberg. Michael says, "Dear Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, my name is Michael and I am a DXer from Sweden. I was listening to 9,855 kHz on June 18th, 2021, between 2010 and 2020 UTC. The signal strength was good. I listened with my own private antenna in Lindum on west coast of Sweden. I attach a small MP3 file. It would be great if you could confirm my reception by a QSL card. Thank you in advance. Have a nice day." And here we have an email from Michael Sjöberg from Sweden. Michael, salam and warmest greetings to you from Iran. And we do express our appreciation to you for sending us this email. And it seems that you've already joined to IRIB English Radio listeners. We are happy for that. And it's great that you found our signal strength good. So you listen to IRIB English radio programs via your own private antenna in Lindum on the west coast of Sweden. That's great. And yes, we've received your small MP3 file. My colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card. You know why? Because we are in the time of coronavirus pandemic and we can't send you our PayPal QSL cards. For your information, that you've already joined us, in the past we sent our dear listeners paper QSL cards, but now we are sending you eQSL cards. So wait for one of them. Michael Sjöberg from Sweden. Michael, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And you can also follow our website at www.parstoday.com/yen, and there you can find the online broadcast and the archive of our programs and our frequency schedule. Many thanks, Michael, for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And now, dear listeners, we've reached to the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
Hello and greetings to IRIB English Radio staff, and many thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Mohammad Reza. I'm from Tehran, Iran. I'm an engineer. I'm interested in English language and listening to shortwave radio, especially IRIB English Radio, which is the best radio station in the world, in my view. You know why? Because it provides the best and most updated programs for all people around the world. You are really unique. I'm a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. I have been listening to your radio since very long time ago. I'm especially very much interested in your cultural and touristic program. I really like this series called Close of Iran, which is about the tourist attraction of Iran and Iranian cultures. Thank you very much for producing such programs, and many thanks for respecting different tastes. Please keep up the good job. I wish you all the best.
Dear listeners, before ending this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I do express my deepest condolences on the tragic martyrdom anniversary of Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, the fifth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him, and his progeny. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, many European Union countries seem to be at a crossroads between their slogans and their actual reality on the ground. The latest paradox comes from a ruling by the European Court of Justice, which says, quote, a ban on religious symbols such as headscarves may be justified by the employer's need to present a neutral image towards customers or to prevent social disputes. So where does that leave the individual freedom and religious freedom that most European countries brag about? Stay with us as we spotlight this issue. Stay tuned, please.
Shock has rippled through the Muslim community after the European Union's highest court ruled that businesses can sack Muslim women for wearing the hijab if they work face-to-face with customers or if the wearing of the religious clothing causes workspace conflicts. The ruling was in response to a case brought by two German Muslim female workers who were asked by their employers not to wear Islamic headscarves while at work.
The decision has been met by claims that it will further fuel Islamophobia at this crucial time when countries in Europe such as France and Austria are already eliminating freedoms for Muslims, supposedly to combat extremism.
In Britain, several religious MPs, including Muslims and a Sikh, chastised the court, labelling the ruling as Islamophobic and deeply flawed. In addition, I spoke with a London-based female Muslim media personality about her fears for the future of Muslims in Europe.
To me, I feel oppressed, to be honest, by this decision. And I feel that I am now limited in my identity and my freedom of rights, freedom of belief, all the values that are actually supposedly meant to be Western, modern. Yes, part of it is a symbol of my faith, but it's so much more if you were to really understand what the hijab actually means or any sort of religious symbol. It is not just coming from one aspect. I think it's really unfair. And it's, again, it is targeting a particular group, especially the Muslim women, because we are the ones that are known to be wearing the headscarf known as the hijab.
Many activists warned that following the niqab ban, European powers would target the hijab next. They were right. But if the battle to protect the hijab is lost, what comes next? Robert Carter, London.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this spotlight. Director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, the President of Islamic Society of York Region, Mr. Zafar Bankash out of Toronto, and historian and journalist Brett Yonkers out of Hassan. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let me start this off in Toronto. And Zafar, your take on this overall ruling by the EU court.
It's a very disturbing ruling because Islamophobia has now been given legal cover as well. We know that Islamophobia is widespread throughout Europe. And of course, that was at the social and political level. But now we see that Europe's top court has provided it legal justification. So now the regimes and right-wing extremists that are opposed to Muslims will find more reasons to continue with their extremely oppressive policies. Now you see, here is the contradiction. On the one hand, Europe and the West in general talk about women's rights, women's freedoms, and so on. And here is a situation whereby if women choose to wear the hijab, the Muslim women, of course, then they are being forced not to wear it. So again, there is open hypocrisy, which is borne by Islamophobia and racism, and this is all directed against the Muslims. We also know that, for instance, in Europe, in many parts of Europe, and in particular, for instance, in the Vatican, there are nuns that wear a particular kind of dress, and nobody ever objects to that. But yet, here we have a situation whereby they are forcing Muslim women, as was the case in Germany, that two Muslim women are being forced to take off their hijab, otherwise they would not be able to serve their customers. So it seems to me that they are, on the one hand, while talking about women's rights and women's freedoms, they are actually squeezing Muslim women out of the workforce and preventing them from their religious rights and their freedoms. In Europe, people are, according to them, they are free to dress as they like. Now, if Muslim women want to choose the hijab for wearing, then I'm afraid they should have that choice, but they are not being given that choice, and that clearly shows the trajectory of Islamophobia that is taking place in Europe today.
Brett, what do you make of what our guests in Toronto say? Because it is interesting, on the one hand, many of these Western countries talk about women and their freedom and right to basically be whoever they want to be. Yet a Muslim woman seems not to have that right in Europe, at least according to this court's ruling. Your take on this?
This is definitely one of the great ironies that exist in contemporary European society in terms of the way in which modern Europe deals with the significant Islamic community that exists on European soil and has existed for several decades now, of course, all across Western Europe, and has no, of course, no reason to subside or to move away. What is going on now is that under the moniker of this so-called neutrality, that they are basically targeting indeed Islamic women. And the great irony here is that Western media and political pundits and politicians, especially of the right wing, are constantly spinning the story about Islamic women, Muslim women being oppressed by their husbands, being oppressed by their fathers before they get married, and by their husbands afterwards, and being treated as inferior within the Islamic community, and being in need, quote-unquote, of course, of being liberated by Western values. But then when you go and study the way in which the European powers seek to, quote-unquote, liberate them, are measures with which they de facto drive people even further away from integration and drive women away from the public sphere. If you are going to limit the possibility of female Muslims to wear the hijab, to wear the Islamic religious garb, to wear the headscarf in any form of public office, and now we're talking not just public office but private office. In Germany, we're talking about a child daycare worker and a pharmacy worker, none of which really work in a public office per se, who are now being banned from wearing the hijab in their job. Of course, the question that needs to be asked is, how is this going to help empower Muslim women? How are you going to create this, what the West believes that they want to do, is create these sort of Muslim women who can still be religious, let's say, who can still be Islamic, but who follow this sort of Western liberal feminist agenda, and who can be free to work, who can be free to develop themselves. How are you going to achieve that if you're going to push them out more and more and more? We see this as well here in Boston, a female hour, one hour a week, and in which only women were allowed to swim. This was immediately destroyed by right-wing politicians as a form of Islamification of society, even though this was not even an Islamic demand only. This was just purely an idea of having a sort of a safe space, a safe area for women to express themselves amongst women and as women. And this was taken away, and this was panned by critics and by right-wing pundits as well. So this is the great irony that we see over and over again, that Muslim women are constantly shunned, they are constantly pushed away from society, even more discriminated, even more than the Muslim men are in many ways. And for some reason, these Western powers, in their propaganda, makes it seem like they're doing this for the best interests of women, for the best interests of Muslims, and that it's somehow supposed to be liberating them.
Okay. Well, Zafar, do you think in general there's just an increased effort in Europe to dilute the Muslim identity, especially when dealing with Muslim women wearing hijab? And if you agree to this, why is this the case? What exactly are these entities after? What's the goal?
Well, basically, what this indicates is that the West's so-called soft power appeal has completely failed. It was Europe as well as this is also, of course, the case in North America. For instance, right here in Canada, in the province of Quebec, they have a law which is called Bill 21, under which women are forbidden, those women that work in public institutions such as government offices and schools, etc., they are forbidden from wearing the hijab. So what this indicates is that the West's so-called soft power appeal to the Muslim women has totally failed. Under the rubric of, for instance, providing them freedom from oppression, liberating them from the clutches of oppressive Muslim husbands, etc., that has not worked with Muslim women, because the entire premise of the West was totally false. When Muslims wear the hijab, it is not because they are being oppressed, but because they see it as a religious obligation and as their identity. So now the West is using coercive powers to force Muslim women from wearing the hijab. So what this is likely to do is, obviously, if Muslim women cannot find work, they are obviously, the Europeans are basically trying to push Muslims out of their society, because they have realized that they cannot dilute the Muslims' identity. And so this is a campaign that is going to obviously affect the Muslims negatively. They are now being targeted economically, because if Muslim women can't work, then naturally it is going to affect their pocketbooks. And at the same time, create more alienation among Muslims from these societies. So I'm afraid it clearly indicates that the West's appeal has failed, and now they're indulging in these coercive tactics to try to force Muslims to adopt their way of life.
Well, Brett, with what Zafar was saying and saying before, basically women were continually being attacked wearing hijab, basically Muslim men were blamed for them wearing it, either their husbands or their fathers. But, you know, we're seeing more and more actually Western women even convert to Islam and choose to wear it, and these women born and raised in these countries. And now it seems that these European entities, they're kind of up against the wall, because obviously that rhetoric won't sell. But now they're actually trying to make it illegal. How dangerous is this situation? And why is there such blowback for women who want to choose to be modest?
Well, this is all, of course, part of a constant fear, I think, that these powers that be in the West have, that their hegemonic project that has ruled, of course, much of the world for the past 200 years, is slowly, or actually not so slowly anymore now, is losing its appeal to much of the world population. And it's losing its appeal, and it's losing its attraction and its power base, even at home itself. And I think Mr. Zafar Mangash indeed referred to this very very well when saying that this soft power is failing, because you see, indeed, you see Muslim women and of younger generation, born and raised here, whose parents were often born and raised here, and who only have a connection to their Muslim so-called country of origin by going two or three or four generations back. These people are often now becoming more attached to their faith than their parents and grandparents ever were. You see more and more young Muslim women starting to wear the hijab. You see, indeed, a lot of converts or reverts starting to wear the hijab as well. And this is becoming something that is more and more commonplace in Europe. And this causes a massive fear among the hegemonic powers, especially in countries such as France, such as Germany, and also to a certain extent, of course, the United Kingdom. These countries that have built themselves completely on the premise of liberalism, on that classical liberal idea in which religion has been pushed to the private sphere of influence, and in which basically the market and the commodification of everything has become a form of new state religion, they feel threatened by the fact that you have more and more Muslims now who are starting to really express their faith out in the open and out in public, and who say that their faith, that our Islamic faith, is not just something private that we do at home, but it's something we carry with us because it's part of who we are. And this is, I think we cannot talk about this without having to go to the basis of what the immigration that brought a lot of Muslims originally in the 1950s, 1960s, and later to Europe, the immigration from the perspective of the Western powers, the idea was to get these people, a lot of whom are Muslims, but not all of them, of course, to get them to come to Europe to work at for very low wages and very dangerous employment, such as working in the coal mines. But the idea was they were going to work here for a couple of years, make the Western countries and their corporations a lot of money, and then leave. But what happened, of course, is that a lot of these people stayed because they built up a life here, and they had children, and their children had children. And so what happened is that they built up a society in which you have now 5 million, I believe, Muslims living in Germany. And that was not originally something that the powers in control of the country were planning. And especially now when these people start demanding their rights as full-on citizens of the country in which they reside, especially when you have been born and raised there. So these people are not just asking for equal employment and equal and equal chances, but they're now also rising, of course, into public sphere. They're running for election. They're going to work at the judiciary sector. These are all things that were not the plan, of course, of the liberal and neoconservative rulers that rule in these countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. So they feel incredibly threatened by the fact that a growing group of religious Muslims want their legitimate place and demand their legitimate place as being citizens of Europe while also being religious and dedicated Muslims.
Okay,
and that
stay with me, Greg. Stay with me. I'm limited on time. I want to get Zafar back in on this. What about that, Zafar? You heard what Brett said. I mean, what is it about liberalism? Why does it seem, or those who practice liberalism, that they fear this modesty of Muslim women, or they fear Islam? They see Islam as a threat.
Because they have failed to force the Muslims to adopt the Western way of life. You see, in the West, they are saying that women are free to dress the way they like. But when they talk about that freedom, what they are really talking about is that women are free to expose themselves as much as they like. But they don't allow the same freedom for women to cover themselves. And that terrifies those people because they see that their appeal is not working. That what they had conceived was that, you know, these people that come to Western societies, primarily Muslims that would come, that they would be influenced by the so-called liberal values of the West, and they would become exactly like the Western people. Like what, you know, back in 1835, that British Lord Macaulay had said, as they were ruling India, that they were going to create, establish a system of education whereby they are going to create, you know, the Indians that would speak the English language, their mannerism would be English, their clothes would be English, they would be perfect brown Englishmen. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, they kind of brown Europeans that the powers that be in Europe wanted. But they found that the Muslims that